The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
We'll flick through the Sunday newspapers as usual on a Sunday morning. I'm joined by Sinead O'Carroll, the editor of thejournal.ie. Sinead, good morning.
Good morning.
Are you Mayo or Kerry?
I always say that I always want good things for David Clifford because he brings so much joy to Gaelic football. But in this instance, I wish all good things for every single person in Mayo who has...
Get the monkey off our backs now.
Yeah, I think the whole country, I think maybe other than pockets of Galway and maybe a few people still holding on to the Dublin rivalry, I think everybody else would like to see them just... get it over the line and then figure out what their next problem will be.
Then let the real championship begin next year when we get that monkey gone. Okay, looking at the headlines of the papers, I'll go through the front pages first. On alert, ministers brace for the toughest budget in years. That's on the front of the Business Post. And another story, big tech's top Irish staff flocking to AI giants for bumper salaries. The Sunday Independent, patients stuck in hospital for 400 days in backlog and lawyers facing blacklisting in the legal aid row, which is ongoing. The Mail, their front page is all about a photograph, really, isn't it? We'll talk about that in a little while.
Absolutely.
And Guess Who is featured on the front of the Mail. And what else do we have? We have the Sunday Times, if I can find it here.
The Sunday Times, Gardaí probing car bomb linked to former prisoner, and also the solicitor is being blackballed.
And they have an interesting story inside. Nursing home group launching a high court challenge to Fair Deal.
Yeah.
So what have you gleaned from this morning's newspaper?
Yeah, so as you've seen there, we're just running through the front pages, no one big story, but a few themes coming across. We're getting early budget chat. Obviously, we've just had the summer economic statement, so that leads into kites being flown around what's going to happen in the, budget in a few months.
A great promise of inheritance tax being altered, and then that was immediately dashed almost.
Yeah, and because the package is going to be smaller, and you see from the Business Post there that, you know, ministers have been told when you're coming looking for things, have your savings ready. You're going, if you want to be given money, you're going to have to give back somewhere in your own budget. So that's kind of the message being given across. And then you can see some ministers making their public message already in the papers. There's an interview with Peter Burke in the Sunday Independent where he's again bigging up the amount of income tax changes we might see, so that middle income earners, which I think a lot of people are like, what is a middle income earner? I think they're talking about anybody who earns between 40 and 60,000 euro will end up about 400 euro more well off if this goes through.
I was talking to a taxi driver who's now an Irish citizen, has been here for years and years, originally from Pakistan, and he's saying, you know, his wife here has a very good job. He's got a very good job. He also drives a taxi. Why? Because the amount of tax that's been taken from him, he feels it's unfair. He gets nothing from the state, really, but he pays PRSI, USC, PAY, as the rest of us do. But the sums don't really add up for him.
Yeah, I think people are starting to feel like we are an expensive country to live in, and they're not just feeling that at pinch points. It's every single day. It's every single time they go to the supermarket. It's every single time they get a bill in. It's every single time they go to, you know, start a kid in school. So that's part of actually one of the interviews with Peter Burke. They were talking about a potential tourism tax, and he's very against it. But I think this is emerging as a theme. You know, we're one of the only European countries without it. It is a way to bring in revenue. And if ministers are being asked to bring in revenue, if they're going to be asking for more or to save money, that this could be something. And he's obviously tourism minister, he doesn't want it. And he was being asked, he said in America, why would you make Ireland more expensive? And I thought, well, maybe you could ask that on behalf of your constituents as well. How can we make it less expensive for everybody here? The other stories emerging in the papers then, obviously the legal aid row between Jim O'Callaghan and the criminal
And what's
solicitors.
The threat to blacklisting some of these people?
Yeah, so a solicitor has gone on record to the Sunday Times and the Sunday Independent to say that he hadn't withdrawn from the scheme. He thinks that the 520 flat fee structure that has been implemented is fair and generous. He's one of his firm is one of the top earners in the system. And he said that he has heard that there have been threats to barristers to be told, well, don't work with the solicitors who haven't withdrawn their service, because we will then blacklist you and not then ask you to serve our clients in the future, because they're obviously trying to get as many solicitors involved.
This is a kind of a war of words between the legal side and the minister. And you wonder when the solicitors will realise they really have to give Jim O'Callaghan a win, don't they?
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't win, his political fortunes are hugely damaged. And maybe it's better to have one of your own in the Justice Ministry than somebody else.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dollop of common sense, I think, on both sides, because there, it's obviously anything, there's a withdrawal of service, there's always a PR battle. Who's going to win the hearts and minds of the public? In this instance, I don't think there is that much buy-in from the public about what's happening, but they are gleaning the headlines of €31,000 to a solicitor's firm for one appearance in court because they knew how to play the system, you know.
Yeah, if you've got multiple charges and each one of them gets a
240 charge. So if you have 130 charges and there's 240, and then we've also heard details, I think, selectively and judiciously from the one side about what is happening. You know, we know that there was crash courses given by solicitors firms of how to maximise payments under the scheme. And obviously that's part of why the scheme has gone from 19 million 10 years ago to 41 million now, even though there are fewer cases being heard in the courts.
I mean, where the rubber will hit the road on this one is perhaps if somebody who's a dangerous individual has the case adjourned or even thrown out because of no legal representation and then goes on to commit some atrocious crime.
Yeah, and actually the analysis in the papers is really good. Brenda Power, Gary Murphy, so Brenda Power, the back page of the Sunday Independent, Gary Murphy in the Sunday Times and Matt Cooper in the Business Post all kind of make arguments like that, you know, there is no one size fits all for this, because you do have to take into account, you know, if there are adjournments and delays that solicitors aren't incentivized to fight against the state, then you could have instances where people don't get justice because they're able to fight because there's inordinate delays, or, you know, that the system isn't working as planned. And there's also complex cases that 520 flat fee might not work for. And I think one thing that the solicitors will get a win from O'Callaghan on is that they only get paid at the end. And I think any system where you only get paid when something concludes, particularly if it is a complex legal situation.
I presume
situation.
That was an attempt, and how long that's been in place, I don't know, an attempt to speed everything up. You'll get your money when it's done.
Done, yeah. And obviously what we know is the average court appearances is 3 if there's no legal aid, and it's 5 if there is legal aid. The other thing Gary Murphy said is there is power within the judiciary to stop some of the legal aid certificates being granted. So, you know, there are other reforms that could happen. Now, politicians are always loath to talk to judges about how they should do things, and I don't think Jim O'Callaghan would be any different, and probably less so because of his background. But I think there is probably a bit of common sense needed to figure out, okay, where can we get some wiggle room on the flat structure for more complex cases, but also how can we just kind of get the courts moving again? Because at the moment, even with this withdrawal, there is really bad impacts on people who are witnesses and victims, and also people who are waiting for their own trial.
I think the minister, when he was talking on News Talk during the week, talking about these adjournments, and you have Gardaí who turn up to give their evidence, and they're standing or sitting around all morning in Parkgate Street waiting to be called. And eventually they're told, no, the case has been adjourned, come back in October.
Yeah.
Such a waste of
And it's a whole movement of people, and like anyone who has reported down in courts will know, like you kind of go down at 10 o'clock in the morning and you say, oh, I don't know what's going to actually happen. And then you kind of might see a flurry movement. It's actually going to happen. It is going to be the hearing, or it is going to be the sentencing. And that's fine if you're a reporter and it's just your job. But imagine being someone who, you know, has been worried about giving their testimony for weeks, months, maybe years, and that happens. So, yeah, it would be better to have more structure and knowledge about what's happening.
Now, if this was last weekend, we would have been talking all about e-scooters. They are featured in the papers. I mean, on page 14 of the Indo, it could have been fatal. This has been a nightmare. That's one story. But on page 22, you've got Shane Ross, a former minister for transport, and the headline, "Our politicians are guilty of a U-turn that will only lead to more deaths." And tragically overnight, we've had an e-scooter death.
Yeah, 1:45 a.m. in Navan. We just got word from Gardaí that there was a fatal crash and the e-scooter rider lost their life. So, you know, it does look prescient from Shane Ross that he said like continual road deaths will happen because we haven't taken on board what we know about e-scooters and how dangerous they are and how they make more people on our roads less safe, I think. And he said, word will soon spread among the e-scooter users that no one need worry. Cosmetic measures are on the way. Enforcement is a pipe dream. Deaths on the road will increase. But deaths on the road will increase in every form that we take, because the behaviour on the roads and how little policing there is of that bad behaviour is just creating havoc, really. Yeah. Like, you know, the numbers just keep going up. And I think in any other walk of life, if we had that level of death and nothing was being done about it, it would seem unfathomable.
And you wonder, is it simply about manpower, you know, more in the traffic corps, more visibility on the part of the Gardaí? You know the way how well people behave, they spot a Garda car
everyone
in the lane
down
beside them. You know, everybody behaves. So visibility does help.
I'd imagine it does. And also there is technology. And I know the former Garda commissioner wanted to bring in more technology to help with this. And, you know, there are, I think, concerns about people's privacy and the amount of kind of Big Brother cameras we would have around. But even, Pat, if you walk around Dublin City Centre, I walk for about 90 minutes a day. And honestly, like, the amount of times I almost get hit, or my daughter almost gets hit by a scooter, a bike or a car because they've broken a red light, it's actually terrifying.
And the problem is, even if you had cameras, unless you can identify somebody, and if you're on an e-scooter and you're wearing your black hoodie or whatever, and some of them, even in summer, are wearing face masks.
Yeah.
How do you follow? One of the suggestions is drone technology. You spot the wrongdoer and you track them to their destination using a drone, and then you arrest them.
Yeah, I think there's probably some localised stuff with e-scooter use that's particularly egregious. Because a lot of the e-scooter use, like the commuter use, yeah, there might be some bad behaviour, but it's generally people trying to get to work and get home in a way that's convenient, good for the environment, and not that expensive. So I think that's probably different to the kind of hijinks or worse than that that's happening in e-scooters. And I think there's probably a lot of community policing that needs to be done there. Like, you know, I think the guards talk a lot about being able to pursue, but a lot of the time it's like, just get the address. Like, you know how to do that. Like, and you have reason, because there's policing reasons to do that. Knock in and figure out, okay, well, like, can these young fellas, would their energy be better placed somewhere else on a bike park that has been built for, you know, or my consistent view that maybe we should have built the white water rafting so there could be adrenaline junkies could get in a canoe and go across it. I think there is community solutions.
I mentioned the headline in the front of The Independent about 400 patients stuck in hospitals because they cannot be discharged to a proper place of care.
Yeah, and there's some pretty eye-watering numbers. So 521 people waiting to be moved in any given week. And that is up about 100 people. So that's a lot of people waiting to be transferred, mostly to residential care, sometimes back to home, but with home supports, about 10%, and the rest to rehab. The average waiting to get a step down, to get stepped down into the next bit of care, is 25 days across the country. So I think those, the really eye-watering figures, like 401 days in Cork, 423 days in the Mater, they're probably very complex cases. The HSC says there's a lot of complex cases because of assisted decision-making. And anyone who's probably gone through this will know that if you do have to go through assisted decision-making, that can delay things. So I think those kind of very large figures are outliers for that reason. And then the more average ones are things, because we are really short of residential beds, particularly dementia-specific residential beds. So it's the whole system not working well together.
It brings us to that headlines in the business section of the Sunday Times. Nursing home group launches High Court challenge to Fair Deal. This is a group called Care Choice, who argue state funding fails to reflect the real cost of care.
Yeah, and I think we've heard this a bit, but there is also, it's interesting that it's on the business accounts, because there is also a large influx of companies who want to provide a care in Ireland. So,
and there are nursing homes that will only take Fair Deal because they will be paid. I mean, even if it might be not quite the total cost of care, you know, they know the state is good for it.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because both sides of the spectrum are having this same conundrum, where in childcare and in dementia care or older age care, we have a lot of massive businesses coming from abroad, but also domestic businesses that have huge amounts of care situations across the country, and they don't like how they're funded, but they're also, you know, coming here, want the business, and also making large revenues, if not even large profits, large revenues. So how do you make the business model work?
If you're a pension fund and you go into this business and you have the capital, so you're not servicing any loan, then you're generating a steady state of income, which is what pension funds want.
Yeah, and I think what the missing bit in between is the cost of care as Care Choice, the firm in the centre of this row, because a lot of these, the people who work there are earning minimum wage. There is a lot of churn in employment that creates difficulties in maintaining the care facilities. So there is something in getting the employment right and the employment conditions right that is costing a lot of money. Like if you look, I was looking through childcare books of childcare firms recently, and the revenues are huge, but the operating costs are also absolutely huge. So you can see why it's difficult to get the business model right, because there are so many different types of business models that are trying to work within the same scheme, whether it's a small independent or a 40-50 large institution.
Finally, whose picture is on the front of the Daily Mail?
Well, she hasn't been seen publicly in 3 years. The ex-RTE boss, Dee Forbes, who people will remember was, you know,
the committee wanted to talk to her.
Yeah, I think multiple committees wanted to talk to her when they were talking to everybody from RTE or previous of RTE. I'm not sure if you ever got the nod back to go in and tell them what you knew just for gossip reasons. But Dee Forbes, yeah, she obviously had said no because of health reasons. People have gone down to her home in West Cork to see if she would talk, but she has been pictured in West Cork beside her partner's Mercedes convertible having a time. So it has led to the chair of the PAC saying that she should have decency to finally answer TD's questions, whether that's in person or by email.
Now, obviously, a story that is dominating online and broadcast media this morning is that attack in Berlin. Just have a listen to some of the detail.
Police have named 21-year-old Abdul B as their prime suspect following a fatal attack at Berlin's Pride event yesterday. They rushed to help people moments after a car ploughed into the crowd close to the Brandenburg Gate. A makeshift tent was erected to allow emergency services to treat those injured and in shock, many devastated by this latest attack on Germany's LGBTQ plus community.
So that's a brief summary of what went on from Thomas McGill of BBC News. And this kind of, they're soft targets, those kind of events are very soft.
And we've seen a couple of them happen now in Germany. The idea that you turn, you know, an everyday piece of your everyday vehicle into a weapon. It's terrifying for event goers and event organisers, like, and for security trying to figure out how to police those events and keep everyone safe.
Police are saying that the suspect belongs to the city's Islamist scene, whatever that should mean. But I mean, we're not immune to that kind of vulnerability in our city with the attack in Parnell Square on the children.
Yeah, you know? It's one of these things that you try and account for the risks that are there, I'm sure, when you're organising events. But something like that, you know, even the one in Liverpool Landfield, which wasn't, you know, terrorism or premeditated, but just somebody who got angry in their car, you know. So a car can be turned into a weapon, and now there is kind of a copycat, I'd say, structure to how these things happen.
Finally, and we will be talking to John Duggan and Tommy Rooney about the All-Ireland later, but the Independent always likes to have it both ways, you know, both sides of an argument. The curse has been very much alive in Mayo people's minds. That's on page 9. On page 23, a curse on Mayo. Nonsense. It's all down to the match.
Yeah, and it is always all down to the match, but everybody knows with the curse. It's, you know, a well-told story from 1951. But this will be the first time. So the curse was meant to be lifted when all members of the team and squad, whichever way you want to put it, but all members of the team and squad now have sadly left us. And so we will find out today if...
if the curse was real.
If the curse was real or if the curse is over. Either way, the curse dies today. Because, but imagine if they did win and everybody who did actually believe in it, how vindicated would you feel?
Spooky. Spooky. Sinead O'Carroll, editor of thejournal.ie, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.